Let's start with the two stories that are in London Lies, Incurable Romantic Seeks Dirty Filthy Whore, I love that title, and Girl with Palmettes. Do you want to tell me what the inspiration was behind both the titles and the stories themselves?
Yeah, the title's Incurable Romantic Seeks Dirty Filthy Whore is a painting by Harland Miller. The best way to describe it, he paints penguin, classic penguin covers, but with that kind of changed title on. And I liked them, and I'd seen them, and that just struck me. It's obviously in the painting, it's a fictional title for a non-existent book. So I thought, I'm not sure which came first, but it seemed right for that story. So I took it and tried to make sure to say I'd taken it. And the other one is a painting by Malcolm Drummond, who was at one of the Camden Town Group in the early 20th century, who the Camden Town Group, Sickert, and all those people I studied at Birkbeck, which was round about the time I was doing the kind of things that are in that story. And that story was based on a genuine non-date, which involved seeing that painting and talking about it with a girl who looked a bit like the girl in the painting. So it's like 1911, 1914, I can't remember. It feels like it could have been done today.
Yeah, I was about to say there are people like that walking around Camden Town now.
I think I wrote half of that one in a cafe. I think it's mentioned in it, a cafe in Carnaby Street, which was incredibly pretentious and nothing like the cafe she was in, which I just thought was. Like she wouldn't have been drinking Sumatra and coffee beans.
Oh, right. Yes. You wouldn't believe the number of people who say to me, "What's a palmette?" And I have to say, "Go and look at the picture and then you'll find out."
Stencil on the cafe.
It's a stencil, yes. And it's a particular sort of stencil. And it matters not a damn that that's there, but that's what people ask.
That probably makes it a good title because it's a potential thing to say. If anyone looks at Drummond and the people around him a bit longer, remotely because of it, and that's good because they're sort of forgotten. Part of the reason I like them is because they're sort of basically famous and forgotten. It's very interesting stuff.
Okay, so, I mean, apart from the title, what was the inspiration for Incurable Romantic?
Well, Incurable Romantic, it's almost drawn from life. In my late 20s and very early 30s, I was not dating a lot, but dating a bit and not dating very successfully, and constantly going to art house cinemas. I think in that story, there's the setup is that lots of girls seem to want to go and see the same film with this guy because he's the only kind of guy who would go and see that kind of film, which I was at the time. I think it was a specific film, The Lives of Others, came out, which wasn't even particularly obscure. It's just it was in Germany, and I ended up seeing it three times. Once on my own on a day off because I was freelancing at The Guardian. I had days off in the week when no one was around, so I used to hang around the Renoir a lot. Once with someone I was trying to date, and once with an old girlfriend who couldn't find anyone else to see it with her. But I started to get a bit jaundiced. So that's how that story came out. Obviously, it's exaggerated for effect.
No, well, they were really strong candidates right from word go when I decided, okay, it was a London theme. And ploughing through with some help from Katie, say, point me at the ones that are about London. I can't read 580 stories in the hope of finding them. I particularly like the way you get across the bleakness of that precinct, for want of a better word, where the Renoir is.
Yeah, I love
It's such a dive, isn't it?
it. It used to be a dive, and now it's a commercialized, regenerated dive. I find it quite depressing that it's now got French Connection and a giraffe and Starbucks and stuff in it when it used to have sort of rickety old bookshops. It's still got Scoob underneath it.
Oh, right. Well, that's something.
Secondhand shop. Yeah, at least that's the vibe, and you can go and hang around in there wearing corduroy and trying to catch people's eye. But
Pretend to be a spy.
absolutely. Carry a Rubik's Cube. But yeah, the Renoir's just, I mean, it's a fantastic cinema. It's like a cliche zone because it's in a big concrete 70s building and it only shows French films, or mostly some. You occasionally get an Iranian one about a balloon. But I just love the Renoir. I suppose that story is like a sort of very, very, very jaundiced, bitter love letter to the whole experience of hanging around there on days off and trying to date.
I read Incurable Romantic first and I thought, gosh, this is fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, I spent a couple of years doing the art movie thing as well, usually with the same person, I have to say. And so yeah, it chimed. And then Girl with Palmettes, I immediately went and looked at the picture and thought, yes, I see, I get it, nice.
Yeah.
Having this one too.
Well, Girl with Palmettes is a very, obviously it's Camden Town Group, it's a very London picture, I think.
It is a very London picture. One of the things I like about your writing is that it's very firmly rooted in London and it's real places. It's not there's some street in North London somewhere. It's this street, this shop, this seat sometimes even. And I really like that because particularly when it's somewhere you've been, you go, yep.
I had far too big ideas about, there's no other way to say it without sounding pretentious, but psychogeography, being a flâneur, the whole concept of the flâneur, part of studying history of art, which I did at night school while I was working at newspapers and so on, was Manet and Baudelaire and the heroism of modern life and so on and so on, about, so just the, you know, the man in the crowd and everything. It's seductive nonsense, really, but when you're in your late 20s and on days off from newspapers and you've got nothing else to do, that's what I did. I just walked around London, favourite parts of London, usually stopping at bookshops, cafes, museums, cinemas. I don't want to give the impression I was some kind of pervert cruising the crowd.
No, it's just a standard misspent youth that doesn't involve drink, drugs and snooker, isn't it? It's the alternative.
Yeah, but it involves pretension and coffee.
And it made those stories fit so beautifully into the book.
Yeah, well, that's it was lucky that the book came along. I mean, it's just the thing of places. I've always been fascinated by the fact that London's a conglomeration of little places, villages and areas, and I always had a strange fascination with London place names. I grew up in Leeds, and my mum and dad they met in London. They're not from London, but they met there and lived there when they were young. And it's hard to explain. It's like the concept of a street called the Tottenham Court Road, not Tottenham Court Road, which is also a sort of destination because there are cinemas there and electronic shops or whatever. It just fascinated me when I was a kid that there's all these defined places that were just streets.
With their own distinct...
Yeah, distinct places. And same time as I wrote that story, I was starting to work with the Fitzrovia Radio Hour, which is based in, obviously, Fitzrovia, so that kind of chimed in very nicely as well.
Which takes me on to my next question, which is about writing history.
Yeah.
So when did you start writing? What else have you done? Anything else been published? That sort of thing.
I get published almost... It depends on your definition of published. I get published usually once a day on Guardian.
But now you're showing off.
That is showing off. Well, it's not really as... I mean, I'm a copy editor for Guardian US. At the time I wrote the stories, I was a freelancer, occasionally on and off staff for The Guardian, The Independent and The Times. I'm used to having my name in print that way.
Yeah, okay, so let me be more precise. Fiction publishing.
I haven't been publishing anywhere else fiction unless, well, not published, I've been performed.
Performed, yeah.
With The Radio Hour, which is a theatrical radio vintage comedy, which is the best way to describe it quickly, which one of my college friends is an actor in it. And I think he enlisted me, actually. I was starting to write with them, and then he came along to the reading of Incurable Romantic and subsequently asked me to write something for the group, and then within about 3 months I was a member of it. So yeah, I've written for performers, I've written, you know, that's been for Edinburgh Fringe in the West End, everything like that, but fiction-wise, nothing beyond the two stories, actually. So, there was a third story I wrote for Lyre's League which didn't get accepted.
When you're not writing to order for The Guardian, when, where, how do you write?
I used to write quite regularly at home. I try and do 3 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the morning with too much coffee, walk it off, walk it off in the afternoon and edit or rewrite in the evening. That was when I had days free or some time free. I tried to write a novel when I was 29, 30, and I had some time off work, so I ended up in Paris for a month living in Fliché, which was tremendous fun, apart from when I got home and realised that the 75,000 words I had were rubbish. I had fun writing them, so I was just doing the whole loafing thing, but in Paris instead of London, which is like loafing plus. So these days, now I'm married and live in a small flat and have a 9-month-old daughter, writing sort of fitted in wherever I can fit it in. I tend to write in the laundry room. There's a big laundry. We live in a co-op at the top of Manhattan, and there's a big laundry room downstairs with benches around the outside and air conditioning and things. So if I do the family laundry, it takes me about an hour and a half, and that's about an hour of that time. Well, most of that time I can write. So I've written a few more short stories, which I haven't submitted anywhere. There's an agent in London who wants me to write a book about rugby, because that's my special subject.
Yeah.
But I have no idea what to write. But anyway, I tend to be down there in sort of here and there time, basically.
What about your favourite writers, influences, people you aspire to write like, perhaps?
Favourite book is Moby Dick, but I wouldn't.
Ah, yes. It's been done.
It's been done. And then Philip Hoare did the book about Moby Dick, so that's been done too.
Yes.
That's my second favourite book, practically, like Wales. Comic writing-wise, Woody Allen. Mm-hmm. Never get there. But his stuff from the 60s, 70s, his New Yorker pieces, I think are about the best comic short stories I've ever read. Otherwise... No, I'm just trying to look at my shelves and work it out. It's like I can see an embarrassing youthful love for John Fowles, which I wouldn't carry on now, but I can see he's on the shelves. So, well, Philip Roth.
Mm-hmm.
Say that's he's probably my favourite writer, I would say, favourite novelist at least.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he's influenced your writing at all?
Yes, in the effort to be quite unsparing, mm-hmm. cynical. I mean, when that first story was written, because both those stories are based on real life, and one in the first, no escaping it, in the case of Vancouver Romantic, the one of the women was in the room when it was read.
Ooh. Did she realise?
No, she didn't. I can hear her laughing on the recording, but I always wanted. I went to Liars League a lot, listened to stories, and I liked it, and I thought the concept was fantastic, and some of the stories were fantastic, but I always wanted to be a bit more unsparing, which is the sort of... It's just like unsparing to myself, but also to everyone else.
Yes, there's a definite edge of cruelty.
Yeah, there is, but it's like...
But it's very enjoyable.
I just can't remember where I read it. It might have been a piece about, like, Roth and Woody Allen and people, and sort of... I'm totally swimming in the dark, but a sort of... New York Jewish sense of humour of everybody gets it. Obviously, it's a tightrope, but... I mean, I didn't feel too bad about writing, particularly in Cuba Romantic, because I thought the main character was pretty mercilessly treated, and he was pretty squarely me. And basically, it's autobiographical, and I think lots of Philip Roth stuff is. And it's... Well, he is, you know, totally, totally pitiless on his characters, which I quite like. So, I guess I'd say Roth for favourite writer.
What do you want from your writing?
On a thoroughly egotistical note, I've always just wanted to make people laugh. And it's the way I've generally been able to write. I've always written funny stuff, that's the kiss of death. If I say I'm writing funny stuff, then when Incurable Romantic was read, the sheer relief when people did laugh. They were supposed to.
Yes.
It was fantastic. It was an excellent experience to see that. I mean, the second story, Girl with Palmettes, it's not supposed to be quite as funny. It's supposed to be a little bit more serious. It's got some obvious lines going for a laugh in it. But in terms of what I want to complete, I mean, I would like to write a novel. I've always wanted to write a novel. Or mini novels, but I found it rather hard. So. I think, for now, I'm trying to produce lots of short stories, which, if I can find places to place them, I will. One of the problems, I've completed a couple of short stories, which are based on ideas I had in London and set in London. And the obvious place to submit to start would be Liars League in New York. But they're so London that I'm not sure how they'd go down or whether they even get in. Also, Liars League New York has a longer word limit, which I like. So one of the ones I'm very pleased with and I've finished, I can't really submit to Liars League London without taking 500 words off it. for other purposes. I think that the third story I wrote that wasn't accepted was based on something that half happened to me on Judd Street in Bloomsbury.
Yep.
And a couple of the Liars League judges said it was unlikely. I was like, well, it did happen. I don't think I managed to persuade them it could have happened. In this case, I was too engrossed in a copy of the London Review of Books to notice a quite nasty moped crash, and then as a result of that, something happened at the next table, which was between two people, which was really odd, and I sort of half noticed all of it. Mm. I think I read about the moped crash in the Standard the next day. And I'd been sitting right next to it.
You've been right there.
I was right there, but I was too busy drinking coffee and reading the London Review of Books. It says something about, you know, being self-absorbed in 29 or whatever.
Okay. Well, thank you very much then, Martin.
Pleasure.
Let you go and get your breakfast.
Thanks for letting me bang on about myself for a bit. I always enjoy it.